to share. So send a smile and show you care.
Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing? I am back. This is James Martinez with Cashflow. I want to thank everybody for your emails that I've received in the last couple days. I've been missing in action, under the loop. I got a little sick with a little flu, got a little dis-ease out there, but I've remedied that. I am back. I've been out of town in Oregon, where I was watching the culture there be run by machines there in a completely different environment, in a completely different way. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't care where you go in this country, the issue with finance is the number one thing on everybody's mind in whatever financial status anybody is at. So I got to see that in a completely different environment, in a completely different way, because I had never really been to Oregon before as of late. I hadn't been there for many, many years, but I am back now. I am here. Special guest today, Bob Neverett, going to be today talking about some of the other issues we've been discussing here, the McLuhan model and so forth, and how that applies today with today's financial environment and what to expect, how to handle it, different ways of looking at it so you understand and can read between the lines. So without further ado, Bob, are you there? Hello.
Yes, James. Welcome back. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How's it going?
I'm interested in what you noticed. You were in a different medium, sub-medium, I would say, because you were online, you know, dealing with your chip body constantly, I imagine, but what did you see for your physical body there, or is that what you're not referring to?
I was referring to both aspects, actually, because the entire environment there is still, people are still walking around with their machines, checking their machines, monitoring their machines as they're monitoring their physical bodies, going into stores, down the street, and looping around whatever it is their financial pressure is over there, even though it doesn't matter the pace of the culture. If it's L.A. is like a boiling pot of psychosis, it's the unfriendliest city in the world. If you speak to somebody here and have a greeting back and forth, it's initially indicated as offensive. You have to have permission to greet somebody out here, especially if they have a phone, because they use it here as a mechanism of a social, like, I'm important, I'll be on the phone, or I'm important, that means don't talk to me even if nobody's on the line. Whereas in Oregon, the voltage is way down, the stress level is way down, people are a lot friendlier. At the same time, though, they're still carrying around their phones, and conversations are interrupted. Banks are still, finance is still a big issue with strangers that I spoke to about the situation. So it's just the same thing, only the intensity is a little less. That's what I would say.
Right. I was thinking about the Ron Paul, you know, march and counter convention the last couple of days. Have you watched any footage on that?
No, I have not watched footage on that.
Well, what's interesting, apparently only 8,000 people showed up for the walk, the march, but they're moving to another building, a bigger building, to have the counter convention that he's going to have there in the Twin Cities. And so the speculation that there's a lot more people coming because he needed a building bigger than the building the Republicans are going to have their convention in.
Right.
But I watched it on the newspaper, and I saw an image, and it looks very impressive. You know, this whole highway, some area in Washington with, you know, thousands of people across the boulevard. And I was thinking, well, if it's only 5,000 to 8,000 people, the photograph magnifies it. But that photograph is showing you one little zone of a trillion zones that could be photographed at this point. So it's like McLuhan said, you take any piece of information, no matter how small, give it some kind of electronic media coverage, it assumes quite huge mass just in terms of your perception of it.
Right, exactly.
But there's other bits of information that are inflated the same time that you miss. So when you're walking around in Oregon, in a small town, the medium of the small town makes you think there's human scale. When you're in Los Angeles, the medium there makes you think there's no human scale.
Right. There's interesting. I did notice here, everybody, there's way more people, and way more people are disconnected from each other. Whereas in a smaller town where I was at, they're a little more connected, but the machines are still running people.
Right. It's just that there's more space between people.
Right.
There's
exactly.
still a lot of people in Oregon.
Mm-hmm,
it's just
mm-hmm.
to spread out Los Angeles.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that is irrelevant to the chip body, what I'm calling a chip body, which is the need to use the software technology like the cell phone. That is a whole other landscape that you can't see. You can't measure the number of people. You don't have a photograph of it. You just see people reacting,
yes.
interacting with it.
Yep.
So the mixture of the landscapes is something I want to talk about today. The mixture of the chip landscape, the physical body, local scale, what I call chemical body landscape, then the landscape of TV coverage, which you can see. What did mm-hmm. you see on TV, or did you see any TV where you were?
No, I didn't see any TV. I did a TV media fast for 48 hours.
So how was that? Did you feel like you missed anything?
However, you know what? What's interesting, though, is on the airplane on the way back, I can see how if under normal circumstances, if you're out of the loop, so let's use that term, out of the TV screen, out of your observation or interaction with the TV screen for very long, I couldn't siphon it and kind of detect it specifically, but for some reason on the airplane I could. When people don't watch TV for a little while, that creates a whole other anxiety too, regardless of what the paper says or what they're getting on the
cell phone.
Yes, absolutely. I could detect the difference for the first time ever because I can see cellular phone interaction withdrawal, but I can't see TV withdrawal too much. It's harder to detect, but I did see it for the first time.
And you saw it in yourself, or you saw it in people at the airport?
The people at the airport and on the airplane. Mm-hmm.
And how can you say how that was? How could you see that withdrawal?
Because when listening to conversations, somebody would say, "Well, did you hear about this, or did you see this on TV?" And if they're not in the conversations and it's a stranger, you can see how their anxiety happens if they're not up to date with what's going on. I mean, I look at it the same way as the last week of American Idol. You know, the whole United States is watching American Idol. If you sit next to somebody that, you know, isn't watching TV at all, there's like problems, like they have withdrawal, like there's something the matter with them because they're not participating in it.
Right, they look naked. They're like walking down the
right.
street without any clothes on.
Exactly, exactly.
And media are our new clothing.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, if you had access to the National Press Club and you had a chance to speak, would you expect anybody to believe what you're saying?
No, I wouldn't expect them to believe what I'm saying, but they would know my intention, and I could look at anybody in that audience individually or put them next to me or even in a group dynamic, and just by the language and me using it and explaining it, they would believe me. Or if they didn't believe me, they'd be bothered enough that it would loop around in their brain and be enough of a pattern interruption so that 2-3 days later, they would trigger again. They would remember what I said. They wouldn't be thinking about it as intently, but 3 days later, they would still be looping around. Because I do know how now, if somebody's so wired up, how to get in there and interrupt the pattern briefly and then leave something there. I do know
that's
how to do that now.
That's interpersonal speech medium you're talking about. Interpersonal people in the room listening
yes.
to your talk.
Oh, you're saying if I was like in front of the National Press Club, I'm presuming you're saying I'm talking in front of them, right?
Yes.
Yes.
In the room, and then you're being broadcast. I don't know who would be picking it up. The reason
mm-hmm.
I bring this up is, do you believe anybody when you watch them on TV?
No. Because I know what they're saying isn't what they're saying in the first place. Even if they're sitting in front of me saying the same thing, what everybody is saying in language patterns, just switching back and forth to people, whatever they're saying isn't what they're saying. What they're saying is in between the words of what they're saying. That's what they're really saying. There's more in what they're not saying than what they're actually saying.
Okay. Now take that. The reason we would say there's more being said, aside from what they are verbally saying, is that when you're watching TV, you cannot be hypnotized. You cannot be involved in the speech. So that's why you look at their hairstyle, their clothing, who else is watching, how many bodyguards they have. All those things that your eye scans, which is visual material and kinetic, not just verbal or oral. Mm-hmm. So you could not have anybody really grab an audience, electrified audience attention through speech on television. You can't do it. So it's like Mark Twain or some famous American novelist once said, only fools write for free. The only reason you write is to get paid. So we have to look at today, over most of the 20th century and into now, the only reason you would listen to someone or to even get on there and present a verbal message is that you're being paid to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the economic commodification of speech is a subset, a subtext of TV. So people spend, many people are shy about getting on TV and having all the cameras look at them. It's not because they feel inferior or they're not qualified. I think they know, inarticulately, they know that speech is not what's really the issue if you get on television.
Right.
It's how you look.
It's all about shock. That's it.
That's
what are
right.
we going to pay attention to? The ratings. I find now that with what the content they're putting on, the new shows, the reality TV shows, it's like whatever gets it can get the attention for at least 10 seconds straight, let's put it on. Even if it's garbage, let's put it on.
Yes, the garbage gets attention because it's not what is said.
Right.
It is other factors of human expression that are dominant. Now, mm-hmm. kids go to school, at least for most of the 20th century, not so much now, but they went to school and they had to focus on the verbal. Imagine how impoverished that would be. Maybe you remember that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Think of how impoverished education is. And even messages in the church or in the synagogue or in New Age temples or in Alcoholics Anonymous classes. The focusing on the verbal requires almost a cult-like response if you're going to be operating in a limited information environment like someone speaking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So one could predict that cult-like behavior is the only way you can keep speech going as a medium of attention. So there's a massive effect right from television starting in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that effect on speech is really hard for a literate population, which puts a lot of value in speech. So you could see that speech then would have to be fanatic speech in a club. And so that's why people become fragmented socially when you bring in television, even though television in the 50s unified everybody in terms of the multi-sensory charge of television. For the old medium of speech and writing, you have to be a fanatic to get people to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so cult behavior was a necessary impact of television. So Philo Farnsworth, the great American inventor who invented electronic TV or electric TV, as opposed to J. Logie Baird, B-A-I-R-D, who invented mechanical TV in England in the 20s, neither of them, especially Philo, thought or saw the effect of that medium if it actually was accepted. Now, he got ripped off, Philo Farnsworth. He didn't fully get the benefits of invention. I think it was Sarnoff of RCA that got the credit bringing in the TV environment. But they did not foresee that it would change society incredibly and change the dynamics between people. Why can't we talk about that constantly? Why can't we take my verbal message and make a cult out of it? Since it'd be the only way to reinforce it in this situation.
Well, I have no problem with that because right now it's like, you know, you either get with it or, you know, you might as well go stand next to the button.
Right. So the newscasters get legitimacy, the mainstream news, by accusing outsiders like Ron Paul or Lyndon LaRouche or Reverend Moon or anybody who's fanatically trying to re-strengthen their verbal message as
right.
cults. But mm-hmm. they do not, the regular news people, do not talk about the effects of their own medium. They will
right.
not.
Mm-hmm.
They might have an expert on talk about the content and statistics, how many viewers are watching a show. That's the Nielsen ratings. But they will not talk about the medium. I mean, this is a huge blind spot.
Oh, it's the blind spot.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, speaking of which, before I forget, and this is pertinent to these people that are trying to reinforce their whatever out there in this in the verbal world, if you look on the cover of Wired, now this is probably what McLuhan said, and now it's on the cover of Wired, that some hot little girl has become a national celebrity in certain, like, clicky groups of people.
Yeah.
Just by her blog and MySpace. And now she's getting paid loads of money, invited everywhere. Her whole media status came from nothing. So she got in front of a PC or Mac computer, put her pictures on, and began, and did everything from a keyboard. And now she's on printed space out there, and it's going to be, and she's already got invitations for movies, everything, the whole thing. It's like she created this whole thing from the computer.
You don't, I remember years ago there was someone called Lonely Girl who was the first to do that. Is this Lonely Girl?
No, this is somebody, I mean, this is the biggest hustler I've ever seen. Because she managed to create an entire media idea image through the keyboards of her visual, what she looks like visually, and whatever keystroke she made to create her syntax and words to trigger everybody to get to go to her. And now she's on the cover of Wired magazine, and that's in terms of what you're saying, that's major. I mean, people don't even understand that.
Yes.
Ron Paul and some other people that are trying to do something worth $5 out there of their life for everybody else to help the situation should
yeah.
probably go read that article and check out, okay, why can't I do that?
Yes. The Lonely Girl phenomenon a few years ago was a scripted and managed with people behind her. Is there anybody behind this girl? It's like it was pre-planned with Lonely Girl.
No, because there's other people that have similarly done things like she's done, but not nowhere as big as this.
Well, what is she getting her appeal with? What does she communicate?
Hey, there's millions of hot girls on the web that have blogs and whatever, and it gets a lot of attention. However, this is like a hot girl that had either just was totally, absolutely her life dependent upon becoming a celebrity, and that was her main drive and goal through the system, because she couldn't get assistance any other way of doing it, or it's by design and somebody helped her do that.
Yeah, she's offering sexual tips or something?
No. She in this particular article, she says, I read little pieces of it, but she explains how she did it, how she got that big, how she got through these huge doors that she's gotten through. Major parties, getting on, you know, yachts with presidents or whatever.
Okay, so what's interesting, just from what you're saying, is that she's, quote, hot, but she's not emphasizing that. Everybody else is emphasizing their hot chemical body and doing traditional, you know, Playboy or Hustler magazine kind
right,
of postures
right,
and gestures,
right.
But she seems to be offering the invisible personality of this chip body.
Exactly. She does it. She gets the gold star for it.
Yeah, so she didn't emphasize her chemical body. Well, that's interesting.
Hmm?
Now, the interesting point, though, we've lived with the chip landscape for 15 or more years. There is a familiarity with it, and it's the malaise, the mood of people looking for a new landscape, or a new extension. We're not going to get rid of the chip landscape, or we don't get rid of that, or the TV landscape, or the chemical body, or the religious or spiritual or astral landscape. They remain, but there's needs for a new kind of situation. And I think that is what is happening all across the board, is people are looking for a new kind of image that points past the chip body. Where they're trying to come up with that in politics, in the presidential races. This is the key to Obama's odd appeal, in the sense that he just walks on stage acting cool, doesn't have much to say other than change. There is a
right.
joke. There is a joke there because it's like, buddy, can you spare a dime? Everybody thinks
yeah,
Dumbo.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
He's actually going on
give
there
us some
with
change,
no.
Please, we can't afford any of the big bills, but give us some change. Anything.
Yeah. There could be a pun on change, looking for money, since you're saying the financial environment is the key issue everywhere. To have, actually have a, quote, bum run for president, but a very slick, good-looking bum who's very cool and doesn't get ruffled by the hot issues within the political debate, but just acts cool, but is just asking for change. Interesting pun on the whole situation. Are you there? Okay. So the situation is I presented five phases of automatism last week. Psychological automatism, biological automatism, hardware automatism, software automatism, and autonomy automatism. This new girl that you're saying is on the cover of Wired is an example of autonomy automatism. It's robotic to enter into the chip landscape and present yourself as a free-floating, independent entity. But once you are recognized, like this person is, this young girl, then you are absorbed into the previous automatic environments, the software imagery, the hardware imagery, what James is calling machines. I would not call the software landscape a machine. That's too mechanical. That it involves nuts and bolts. The software, quote, machine is wireless. It is circuitry so that it is invisible. That's a strange kind of machinic situation so that I wouldn't call the people you saw in Oregon responding to the machines. The machines could be the car, the railway, the buses, the bulldozers, the houses, the lawnmowers, but it's their post-machinic, organic, electrified chip technology which is controlling them, but to use the word machine is limited. Have you returned, James?
I've returned, and the irony of my return in our electronic interruption here is exactly what I'm talking about right now. Is that we just got to experience an electrical interference pattern, like we were having a conversation, and then the phone rings, and you gotta get. I gotta get this. So we just had it there, everybody. So sorry for the little small hiccup, but we're back now. Okay, continue.
Well, I detected you had gone, so I carried the ball, retrieving a pattern. I want to develop that after the break, I think, a little bit. But back to this particular issue of the young girl being appropriated from her chip landscape back into the software landscape where she will enter movies and commercials and books and plays and theater, whatever, right?
Right.
The older landscape is sitting there like a lurker, an internet lurker, waiting to pounce. It does not go away. And then the hardware machinic world is waiting via hard cash.
All right,
hard
hang
cash.
On. We're just hold it right there. Hold it on with cash, hard cash. Think about that one, everybody. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back with Bob Neverett. Stand by, everybody.
I've no faith in constitution. There is no bloody revolution.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from The Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind in your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
You've been asking for it, and now you've got it. Every Friday at 3 p.m., Whole Life Pages, the country's largest, most comprehensive directories to natural, holistic, and alternative therapies and resources, presents the Whole Life Pages live internet radio show. Your hosts, Carmen and John LaMarca, publishers of the Whole Life Pages directories, will give you the opportunity to meet the who's who and learn the what's what in these life-changing fields. We'll cover topics such as chelation therapy, nutrition, energy work, children's programs, animal health, coaching, healthy eating, feng shui, healing alternatives, and so much more. Our goal at Whole Life Pages is to provide you with the tools through which you can be empowered to positively affect change in your life and in the lives of others. For more information, visit our internet edition at www.wholelifepages.com. www.wholelifepages.com. And remember to tune in every Friday at 3 p.m. to the Whole Life Pages live radio show and change your life.
Is proud to sponsor Behind the Paranormal with Paul and Benjamin Eno. We offer the best in unusual New Age books, along with three great books by your host, Paul Eno. New River Press offers the new blockbuster on animal communication, Hear All Creatures, The Journey of an Animal Communicator by Karen Anderson, and experience 41 Signs of Hope, the inspiring book by Dave Kane. And don't miss Shadows on My Shift, real-life stories of a psychic EMT by psychic medium Sherry Lee Devereaux. Achieve radio talk show host of Opening Your Intuitive Eyes. Available from New River Press, publishers of unusual books. Visit newriverpress.com, amazon.com, or your favorite bookstore.
Listening to AchieveRadio.com, the positive side of broadcasting.
Okay, we are back, everybody. We are back. We are back. Okay, where were we? We were talking about the girl on the cover of Wired magazine, right? Are you there, Bob? Bob, are you there? Well, it seems to me we're having some technical difficulty today. I don't know if Bob disconnected or not. Hang on.
I'm here, James.
Okay,
I'm here.
Okay. Okay, all right.
Okay, we were talking about hard cash. And that's what
yes.
I brought up the last couple of words.
I
wanted to go into a pattern. We joked last week how each week we have to come up with a new pattern to create a sense of movement in learning and evolution of pattern recognition, even though it
yes.
comes back to the same point or same message in the end. I want to build on the pattern that I presented last week of the 500 years of Western man's robotism, or being a robot. We went through psychological automatism, biological automatism, hardware automatism, software automatism, and then autonomy, or individual, quote, freedom automatism. The new pattern revolves around a book called Technological Revolutions in Financial Capital. And this is written by Carlotta Perez about 8 years ago. She's a honorary research fellow at the University of Sussex in the United Kingdom. Now, she's come up with some interesting perspectives over the same range over the last 500 years. I want to offer this as a response to the theme of hard cash. Her book is called Technological Revolutions in Financial Capital, subtitled The Dynamics of Bubbles and Golden Ages. Now, right today, when we talk about hard cash, we know that it has to move through several environments, the chip landscape, the software imagery landscape, and the actual paper money landscape. So, James, from now on, can we not, at least when I'm on, not use the word machines, that the people are being run by machines? Do you get my point that the image
we'll
of machines
that.
Are too mechanical?
Mm-hmm.
The appeal of the modern, quote, machines are that they are so user-friendly and subtle and cuddly. That's what your cell phone is. I see people, you know, they're jogging along where I am with a little armband and a little cell phone in the armband. It's all very convenient. It's not a machine as we think of the machines. They're still taking us over, like you're saying, but they are not. You cannot make an impact using the word machines, I don't think, anymore. So let's not use that word. So let's go through the history of the machines as they move from hardware automatism into software automatism. Ms. Perez, that's P-E-R-E-Z, begins with the Industrial Revolution in around 1770. And she carries it up to about 1830. Now, she says there's several phases. When you bring in a new technology, so let's think of whatever new technology that's going to change our situation over the next couple of years. Think of it as cold fusion if a free energy battery came in. Let's say a new revolution, everybody starts using this technology.
Right.
Her first phase is called eruption. That's I-R-R, not E-R. Eruption. I-R-R-U-P-T-I-O-N. An eruption of the technology itself and a decline of the old industries, unemployment, those kind of immediate effects. That's the first phase of the installation period of bringing in new technology. The next phase is what she calls the frenzy, where there's a financial bubble time, intensive investment in the revolution, decoupling of the whole system, polarization of rich and poor, and all kinds of other effects. Or polarization of those that don't have the technology and those that do. This inevitably, through the last 300 years, leads to a crash. Always will be a crash. Then there's a period of deployment after the crash or turning point. So I've been describing the eruption and the frenzy in the installation period. Just think of the dot-com of the 90s. The eruption in the late 80s, early 90s, with Microsoft and other high-tech software autonomy breeding technologies, subtle friendly machines. And then there is the frenzy, the last part of the 90s, of the investment and the throwing the money at any dot-com proposal, right? Then we went through a crash in the 2000-2003 period. Then we move into what's called the golden age, or the synergy period, where the actual technology has become kind of cliche. Everybody has to adjust to it. Everybody starts using it. So the institutions recompose themselves using new technologies. So if we brought in cold fusion, that would affect the oil companies and all kinds of energy grids in the United States. So this would be a period of coherent growth with increasing externalities and increased production and reemployment. It then, in this deployment period, from synergy goes into maturity. And that's where there's market saturation with this new cold fusion. And then there's disappointment and boredom and complacency, and then yearning for a new technological revolution. Mm-hmm. So the eruption and the frenzy are the installation period. After the crash, there's a deployment period of synergy and maturity. These are the phases she outlines in her book. Now, examples in history. When the Industrial Revolution came in Britain around 1770, the eruption period was the 1770s and early 1780s. Then the frenzy or investment was 1780s and early 1790s, which, if you think back, was the time of the French Revolution. Then there was the turning point in the crash from 1793 to 1797. That's when you had the beginning of the rise of Napoleon. Then there was the synergy or deployment of the Industrial Revolution from 1798 to 1812. Remember the War of 1812 in the United States?
Yep.
Then you have the maturity phase, 1813 to 1830. Now, that's the basic pattern for the great surge of the Industrial Revolution. Then from 1830 to 1875 was the age of steam and railways, which went through the same eruption, frenzy, crash, synergy, maturity phases. The third big technological breakthrough she calls the age of steel, electricity, and heavy engineering. That's from 1875 to 1920. Goes through the four phases. The crash in that period was 1893 to 1895. That's for the age of steel, electricity, and heavy engineering. In the fourth phase, from 1908, 1910, 1920, general period, up to 1970 was the age of oil, automobiles, and mass production. That had the eruption, according to her charts, 1908, 1920. Then it had the frenzy, 1920, 29. That was the big boom in the roaring 20s. All right, you remember that? Then there was the crash in Wall Street, 1929 to 1930. Actually, she says 1929, 1933 in Europe. Then Hitler and the Nazi and fascist movements came in to bring in the deployment period of oil, automobiles, and mass production. But it was not as easily arrived at in the United States, so its turning point was 1929 to 1943. Actually had to get into the mass production during the war, Second World War, to get into the deployment or synergy phase. That goes for the age of oil, automobiles, and mass production from 43 to 59, then the age of maturity and boredom and complacence about oil, automobiles, and mass production is 1960 to 1974, according to her chart. That's when people were getting angry at the machines, and the counterculture started to rebel against the machines, the old hardware machines, right? Mm-hmm. But sneaking up on everybody was the fifth technological revolution, the age of information and telecommunications. And that's from 1970 up to, and she has a question mark, the installation phase of the age of information and telecommunications is 1971 to 87. You remember there was a computer Wall Street crash in 1987 in October. Then she has the frenzy period, 1987 to 2001. Then she has the turning point or crash period, 2001, to question mark. We don't know how long this crash period is going on. Many people would say we never got out of the crash over the last 7 years, though there may have been some upsurge in Wall Street, supposedly, once the Iraq War started in 2003 up to last year. So we don't know when the synergy and actual maturity phases come. But that's an example. So when I was laying out my chart of the phases, you remember I was talking about the scientists, the poets, the artists?
Yes.
Those phases? This is the technological environment that matches up with those phases I was telling you about last week. Now, what do you think of this? When you hear this for the first time, what do you make of this?
Well, I make, first of all, as you go in sequence like that, it tells me that if I were the powers that be and I had the machines, those devices, instruments, if that were the case, then I could control everybody. If I knew how to do it, if I understand all these concepts by you transmitting it this way and I had access to that, I could control everybody. Which means if and when Cold Fusion comes out, there's going to have to be, there's social engineering going on now, like a science, like behavioral software to get people to react to and buy and spend and all that. But for something this big, it would have to be with people that would have to have the better interest of humanity, because it would be that something like this would cause absolute mass total chaos and war and greed and everything.
Yeah, for the older technologies, it would cause war for them, because this, if cold fusion is what it's touted to be, it would mean that you would not have to buy any more energy, because once you had your cold fusion battery, it would give more energy than was put into it. That's the point
That's
of it.
It's
not entropic. It doesn't wind down. So
right.
It would be actual freedom.
A permanent, yes, freedom.
Permanent freedom. Now, what does that do to people's sense of identity? Now, you say that if someone understood this pattern, they would be able to control everybody. How would they do that? Verbal messages? I don't think so. That's the Orwellian idea. That's some big
no,
brother.
No, but I'm saying if there's a group of five people that have cold fusion and decide when and how it is going to be distributed, they're essentially going to be ahead of everybody else. They're the ones that start it. They have the ability to change the world and the thoughts about the world and how we interact, everything. They have the power to do it. That's what I mean.
Yes, and you put yourself in that position. Wouldn't that be quite intimidating if you're not a genius person, but a reasonable, intelligent, sophisticated, you know, Los Angelino person? Would you be excited about being offered that role, that decision, you and a committee of four or five others?
That's a big question, because there's a lot at stake there. I'd have to sit down and absolutely have no judgment or preconceived ideas and get rid of my ego, get rid of anything associated with people. I'd have to look at that from many different angles, because you'd have to be of a higher consciousness, a way, 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 way higher consciousness to be able to make decisions like that that are going to affect the entire planet.
Right.
So
now,
I don't know.
I understand.
I would consider it, but that's a role very, 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 very few people should even ever experience. It's too much responsibility.
Yes, this will be a revolutionary new medium. Now, according to my sources, Arthur Clarke, the famous science fiction writer, created the famous movie 2001 with Stanley Kubrick. He was asked to sit on a panel in Japan as the Japanese looked at this cold fusion battery that Pons and Fleischmann invented or discovered. And they were still looking at it, you know, 5 years later. It is pretty intimidating. So probably it'll come in accidentally. We'll muddle into it. It'll just be forced to happen. For example, if we reach a situation where oil can't get out of the Middle East, a country like China would go for something like this, and they'll implement
yes.
it.
Yes.
So when people talk about the 2012 syndrome, that something's going to happen
at the end of the
they call it the singularity, the breakthrough. Terrence McKenna discusses it as the information accelerating so much that it just becomes blinding. I don't think we have to get dramatic like that. Just the problem of cold fusion, which is here, supposedly, matches the scenarios that people would think fantasize about 2012.
It's like the scene in The Saint with Val Kilmer, when the activation of the cold fusion device is witnessed by hundreds of thousands in the street in this fictitious movie about scenarios in Russia. Everybody's seen that. deafening silence of the paradigm shift as that occurs. When I think about it, the global repercussions of that act, by, you know, it's slipping through. I think the powers would be would have to distract a lot of people so that it would be kind of like, you know, introducing the UFO subject. If it's
okay,
real,
let's
bring it in real slow. Let's bring it in real slow because people really can't handle it. And people really can't handle cold fusion either.
Right. I like your idea of the deafening silence, because I say that the post-chip landscape is what we're feeling through now, and I call it the post-information age, post-information phase. No communication has any staying power. You see with people addicted to imagery on TV or in their computers, because the verbal, which is very important for little people, doesn't hold anybody anymore, so then they wallow in the other sensory extensions in this limbo. But the real effect is there's a deafening silence, and we've had a president who has been a great non-communicator, representing the hidden effects of this cold fusion sneaking in. So the deafening silence of right now, of this decade, represented by the major political institutions, is countered by a financial panic, a financial distraction.
I live it every day, so I am your feedback loop. I'm the feedback loop, I would say, for the U.S. country. Maybe, yeah, well, definitely the U.S. and some Canada as well knows that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it impossible today to live on welfare?
Isn't it
a guaranteed situation in the United States that if you have no job, that you will get some kind of welfare?
Yeah, pretty much. State by state, I think the amount you get is different. I'm not for sure on that, but it's you can't survive.
You can't survive on a normal diet, a normal cigarettes, Coke, gas prices, and those kind of things, right?
No, you can't have on that. You really can't have like a lifestyle or at all. You'd be existing.
Right.
That's all.
Even though maybe supplements are expensive, if you found the right supplements or some simple powders that gave you more energy, you could survive on welfare if you live like a monk or our image of a monk.
Yeah, you'd have to. It would be workable if you were of a very divine inertia inside of you to be able to live like that, hand to mouth, and be happy. Though I know there's people out there that do live like that, but generally, anybody that's that they're under duress.
Right.
You know.
So to live at the highest levels of technology requires us to be spiritual. That would be the committee that's bringing in cold fusion. And to live at the lowest levels of technological involvement, what we consider the poverty line of people on welfare, you've got to be spiritual. So there's a lot of people selling books about how to be spiritual.
That's right. Right.
And concepts, old concepts of spiritual. I think that what I'm offering, the awareness of the four bodies and the juggling of them, and that you actually don't need to eat as much as long as you've got a TV to distract you. You don't need to take the TV seriously, but it could distract your energies. And most people on welfare have television, right?
Yeah, but
supposedly.
The problem is that there's so much food that they sell on there that it's almost, you know, Carl's Jr. spends a lot of money to make sure that you salivate when you see the commercial.
Right, but if you understand that that's just your chemical body and that you don't need to respond to the image, you just need your brain receiving the light from the TV screen, that'll feed you.
Yeah.
In other words, if you have images that you have a stomach, and that must be filled, if you could realize that you have three other stomachs, that imagery might allow you to not be so driven by your chemical body stomach.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new kind of media yoga I'm talking about. A yoga that doesn't interact with the wilderness. It's a yoga that interacts with the software, subtle bodies, or what you would used to call the machines.
Hey, wait a second now. Well, Bob, I just got this came through on this fast blast thing here. It's a question. I've been hearing, this is from JJ in Northern California. I've been hearing that Congress and the administration are quietly gearing up for a major collapse and riots, etc., and that select units in our military are being briefed on martial law options and plans. Do you see this happening? What do you think might happen if it does?
Well, I say martial law already happened in the cities and major cities in the 70s and 80s with the increasing police funding, the surveillance, and the huge amount of employment for policemen and patrol cars. So all the major cities were put into concentration camp mode very subtly, and that has been martial law. There's for the chemical body, for the hard cash world, and which becomes digital software money, martial law was brought in with Secretary of the Treasury Henry Paulson's group called, formed in March this year, called the President's Working Group on Financial Matters, where basically they're going to have surveillance over all the functions of normal insurance companies and banks and financial services. And that will not be able to be realized, but it will be. It is proposed, and it's attempted to being implemented. That's martial law on Wall Street. So we have to look at martial law for all our bodies, not just the chemical body. And JJ is just emphasizing the chemical body. Now, okay, we're already under martial law for our chemical body, as you saw in Oregon, the machines enslaving the people in their digital local communities, right? Mm-hmm. The digital response.
Yes.
So I'm using the word machines to refer back, though as we talk about the present, there are no machines. We can say, JJ, that the machines have put themselves under martial law, and they don't even bother with the chemical body anymore. And all of that has happened. But what's interesting, we've entered the era of deafening silence, where the communication of martial law is ineffective. Mm-hmm. To the degree it's obvious, you're under control, which is what you saw in Oregon, in a nice little community, all right? Mm-hmm. But the actual present situation is nobody can communicate the effects of martial law
right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if there are plans in Congress to implement martial law, and that's leaked out on the Internet, that to me is a distraction. It's ignoring the horrible scenarios we're already in and also the releasing scenarios we're in. We have to stay tactile. It's never going to be one scenario or another. There's never going to be a total crash, never going to be a total concentration camp. But there are pockets of it showing up all over the place, all over the globe, as older institutions panic. It's just a panic response.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And well, speaking of panic response, people's reaction to finance that I discuss, as I observe somebody and I talk to them about finance or the subject matter comes up, as I observe them and I listen to what they're saying, I'm observing it through these particular filters that you're speaking about. And now I know for sure, 100%, without a doubt. I was sure before, but I wanted to go into a different geographical environment to test how sure I was. But now I know those filters that you're talking, those five bodies, that is for real. That's exactly right.
Yeah, that is a description. I mean, basically, I should hold a press conference and verbally map this out as a scientific discovery. But
that's right. Speaking of which, we got like 45 seconds left, so go ahead.
Right. So when I show up on your show every week, I'm thinking of it as a press conference, but I'm also describing the hopeless futility of actually having a breakthrough, you know, be communicated across the board. And that's the same problem that Arthur Clarke and them have with cold fusion. Where do you implement it? Where do you start to show people when there is an era of deafening silence? That's the interesting dilemma we got ourselves in. This is the fifth beast of the traditional Christian apocalypse.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, Bob. I'll be talking to you shortly. Everybody, thanks a lot. This is James Martinez on Cashflow. Everybody, see you tomorrow. Take care. Thank you.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from the Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. Away for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
Listening to AchieveRadio.com, the positive side of broadcasting.